Stand by. Is this thing on?
Yes, Dan.
Oh, hello.
You're listening to Old News with Dan and Carrie.
This just in.
Breaking news to report.
We are live.
Old newscasters reunite.
Can we just say former?
Sure. Former newscasters reunite behind the mic after more than 20 years.
Old news is good news.
Stay tuned.
Here at Old News, we really get to talk to a lot of interesting people. And, you know, a lot of us dream about going many places, adventuring all over the world, meeting some really interesting people. But some people actually get to do it, especially journalists like the guy we're going to talk to today. Why don't you tell folks who it is?
John Stofflet. He will blow your mind with some of the stories he shares with us. So stay tuned.
Today's guest on Old News is one of my personal local news heroes, really. He's had an illustrious career spanning more than 30 years, he can correct me on that, of local broadcast news, including something like 25 Emmys, stories in 40 countries and 7 continents. Of course, he's had brushes with hurricanes, avalanches, tornadoes, as well as some very famous people, including at least one U.S. president. Mm-hmm. Here he is, folks. John Stofflet, the now retired anchor of NBC 15 News in Madison, Wisconsin, somebody I was lucky enough to watch almost on a nightly basis. And now they're called WMTV News, I guess, John. Ooh.
Yes. Yeah, a little rebranding. Yeah. I took the peacock along with me when I left, I guess. I don't know.
Well, welcome.
Thank you so much, Carrie, Dan. It's a pleasure to be here with you. And talk about the career. I started in 1983 on television.
That's what I was going to. What was your first job in TV, John?
My first job, you guys will relate, it was doing mornings, but there were no morning shows then. It was cut-ins.
Yes.
So I'd get there at like 3:30 in the morning and write 4 cut-ins that would run during Good Morning America, because I was on WKOW, a station you're familiar with.
Oh yeah.
And
we've heard of it. Yep.
We've heard of it. So I'd get there and I would write all the stuff and edit it on 3/4-inch tape. And then I would do these live at 7:25, 7:50, 8:25, and 8:50. And they went all over the state to all 4 stations.
Oh, really?
Wausau, Eau Claire, La Crosse, and Madison. Hmm. So, and then I went out and reported after that, you know, and I'd be exhausted and I'd be waiting. The assignment editor would say, "Oh, I'm waiting to hear back from City Hall about a new ordinance. I've got you set up for a 1 p.m. interview."
You're like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Ready
to fall.
So
that was my first job. Right, well, right.
And I want to show people, you mentioned 3/4-inch tape. And actually, after we interviewed another one of our folks, I went out.
Oh, yeah. Up.
So this was like one of my, I don't know why it's all blurry, because it's a stupid background, but
it's classified.
We were talking about how people used to, apply for jobs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I happened to be in my basement, of course, and I dug up this old 3/4-inch tape.
Oh my gosh.
So we used to have stacks of those, right?
And you'd have to mail them out when I think of the expense. And then a few kindly news directors who would actually mail them back to you and say, "Here's your tape. Thanks for your interest. We don't have anything open." And back then, there weren't a lot of openings, and now it's like any other business. TV stations are just, you go to their websites and there's a lot of openings, you know, like any other labor shortage. So it's interesting.
When you did the cut-ins, they went all over the state. When we did the cut-ins in the morning, it was just Madison.
Right, right. And so it was really weird because they said, "Well, don't make it too Madison-centric, because people in Wausau don't care about the city council in Madison." You know, so it was always very like state government or of a really big story. But the general manager at the time and president of the company said, "I want you to be like a blimp over the state of Wisconsin." So I guess that was my first job.
I've always thought of you as a Goodyear blimp type of guy. Yeah, for sure. So why did you decide on journalism, John? Why was that the career you chose?
Well, I was a kid who, from probably 6th or 7th grade on, growing up in Middleton, Wisconsin, watching my little black and white TV, was just enamored with Johnny Carson. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd watch Johnny every night, and had Rodney Dangerfield on, you know, whoever it was. I thought, what a cool job to interview people who are, you know, not the ordinary people. They're on TV because, you know, they're doing something unusual or unique. And So unfortunately, as I learned the older I got, there was only one Tonight Show host, mm-hmm. and Johnny wasn't leaving anytime soon. And then Jay was in line. And so when I got to the university, back before you registered online, they'd hand you this big book of courses. And I thumbed through and I thought, oh, journalism. Well, that's cool. You know, you interview people, ask them questions, and then put it on the air. So that's how I decided to do that. Probably my senior year of high school. I wanted to go to UW-Madison, and that's how I got into it.
Yeah, I followed in your footsteps there as well. When you went, was it specifically a broadcast program like it was when I was there?
Yes, it was a broadcast program. But as a sophomore through senior year, I worked at the Badger Herald. Mm. And I was the editor-in-chief there my senior year, and then also was working. My first broadcasting job was doing weekend news at WIBA radio. So I did that for a year.
Oh.
And then I was really fortunate in that back in 1983, it was unusual to start in Madison, but I started in Madison because the station had an opening and they could only afford $12,000 for the salary.
I had a very similar story, but it was 17.
Okay.
In 95.
Adjusted for inflation. Yeah. Yes.
Wow. You guys both made more than I did on your first job. Right. I started 6 years later, John. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Well, but I was in the UP.
Oh, yeah.
Lower cost of living.
It is interesting. These days, though, I mean, we had people, they're very qualified, very, they almost could, I think, accomplish more with the technology now in college than I could, but they'll come in straight out of, you know, the senior in journalism school, and they start working and they meld right into the news team as, 22, 23 year olds, which is really impressive. So.
No doubt.
Oh, Dan is screen sharing.
I'm going to do something quick.
Oh,
I just want to show folks real quickly. There's John. He's in New York City right now.
So this is one of the things now that I'm retired is, you know, we can just go and do travel when we want. And New York has always been special to me because my parents met here. My mom was from Brooklyn, born and raised. And my dad was an army boy from Wisconsin who was stationed in Brooklyn during World War II, and they met here at Fort Hamilton. So I just walked over to Brooklyn this morning.
So you're vacationing there right now.
Yeah, we're actually a friend of ours is in England, and he's letting us stay at his place and keep an eye on things. And I also have a sister who lives in Long Island. So I'm here for about 3 weeks. So kind of immersing myself.
What a place though to just hang out for, you know, a couple of weeks, New York City. And you've hung out in a lot of great places, John, over your career.
I've been very fortunate to, and it's very unusual. I used to do career day talks, and these kids would say, oh, wow, you get your job and you go all over the world. And I'm like, well, it was a little unusual. I was fortunate that I worked at a station in Seattle, King TV, that sent me all over the world. And that led to more travel with Nat Geo channel that was, I made it to all seven continents. And as you mentioned earlier, 40 some countries. And the best thing was, the boss was paying the bill because I certainly couldn't have afforded to do all that on my own dime. So, even though they were working trips, it was always extraordinary to go places and step off the ship on the ice in Antarctica and just say, my God, I made it, to my seventh continent. Timbuktu, went to Timbuktu, Mali. So I went all the way to Timbuktu. I'm one of the people that can say that. And that's just one of the things about journalism, as you guys know, is that because you're doing stories on people or places or events that are different from the norm. And so every day it was something different and unique, you're not just reporting on everyday things. So you were meeting extraordinary people, and sometimes going to extraordinary places, like the Super Bowl or national championships, things like that. White House.
How was it that you were able to travel the world for King. That's kind of unusual, isn't it?
Yeah, it was. And so I worked, this gave me a break from daily news, which is probably why I was able to do it for 41 years. It was 15 and a half years on a show called Evening Magazine. And you guys probably are too young to remember. Do you remember the old PM magazine?
It was I remember that show very well.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was a nightly show. At one point, it had, I think, 150 stations around the country.
Oh.
And now there's only one left. King does it. It's called Evening. But it was PM Magazine, Evening Magazine. And basically, it was a locally hosted show that in the beginning had, they'd bring stories in from all the stations that were affiliates, and they were all features. So it was, you know, water skiing squirrel, that kind of stuff. and things with a little more meat to them. But that station, King, at the time, my boss was really into adventure stories and international travel. And because we weren't the news, we were a programming department show. We were able to, you know, work out arrangements where we would go, the French tourism board would pay our way, but they'd have no influence over our story. But it's things you can't do in news. So they would put us up and fly us over, and then we would shoot all of our own stories and put them on.
Man, that's a dream. I was watching the one, and I wrote down, because I knew I'd never remember. Let's see if I can find it. The name of the company that had the private jet that allowed you to do to the ends of the earth. And
TCS Expeditions. Yes.
Well, I got on their website because they're still in existence, right? Under a different name. I'm like, okay, I wrote Dan a text. I said, starting now, I'm saving my pennies to go on a private jet.
Right. And so this private jet, if you want me to go into that a little bit, it was called Around the World by Private Jet. And again, an example of something that on a journalist's salary, as you guys know, if we had to pay to do it at that time in 2001, it was about $40,000 a person. So they would go to 12 countries in 24 days, five continents. And they would go to places like on a private 757 that had half the seats out of it, a chef on board, a bar. And so these were all obviously wealthy people. Well, we got to go because we were doing a documentary, and the company said, sure, if you're going to do a story on us, you know, come along. And they happened to be based in Seattle. So that was our local connection.
Incredible.
So we went to places like you'd be in Easter Island one day, and then you'd go to the Taj Mahal a couple of days later, and then on a safari at the Serengeti and to Timbuktu and to Morocco. It was crazy. It was really something.
And you did some kind of like adventure stuff in there too, didn't you? I think that was more with the National Geographic job you were doing, right? Where didn't you jump off a building at one point?
I did. I did that for both King and Nat Geo. We'd go to New Zealand because they're crazy down there with these action adventure sports.
Yeah.
And there was one where you would, they put a cable on your back like stunt people use.
Yep.
And you'd step off the 70th floor of a building in Auckland, and you'd free fall momentarily, and then it would start slowing you down. But it's probably the most terrifying thing I've done is walk that plank. And then, you know, they're like, all right, John, just give it a go now. There we go. Now, wait a minute. Who gave him the cable for the Aussies? Give him the good one, you know? So then they change the cable out, and, you know, so it was really something. And a funny story on that, the first time I did it, and this rarely happened, I get down to the bottom and I'm like, yes. And my photographer was like green, and he goes, I was not rolling.
Oh,
you are kidding.
No.
And he said, and I said, I was so high on adrenaline. I said, I'll go again. I don't care. So I went two more times.
Oh my gosh. Like that just makes me sick thinking about it. I really don't think I could do that.
Well, Carrie, this is a good spot for your question about, you know, your weekly question.
My weekly question of on-air bloopers. I think you just told us about it. Yeah.
Or were there was there a worse one than that?
Yeah.
There was a time in my first year, and I'm writing scripts for a cut-in during Good Morning America. And it was, as you guys can relate, there was like, I wrote a script and I left a blank. The sheriff's department said, call back and we'll have a name for you at, you know, like 6:45 or whatever. Well, I forgot to call back and I left the blank in the script. And so, it was a car crash or something. And, mm-hmm. and instead of just skipping over, it said like 34-year-old and it was blank. I went, like that. I just panicked. And all I could think of was, oh no, the poor family, you know? And I never did that again where I left something. It's not, you know, in later years, I would have been smart enough to go, the 34-year-old is in the hospital, is expected to recover, whatever. Right. But I panicked. There was this blank hole.
There was always the joke around 27. It was after you were gone. You and I never crossed paths. I think you left a few.
No.
What did you leave at, 89?
Yes. Yes.
89.
Well, 80, end of 80, the very end of 88. Yes. Early 89.
Mm-hmm. There was a famous morning cut-in person at Channel 27 who at one time said, instead of saying the thief had a bandana over his face, the thief had a banana over his face. And that was, that kind of went on. And that was not me, yeah. Just so you know. And it was not Gary.
Right.
But it was somebody else. And I wanted to just... Oh, go ahead.
No.
I was going to say, like, I grew up kind of, I was a senior in high school, and I remember watching you as a reporter at Channel 27 and kind of watching you through college. And you were an inspiration to some of us who, you know, made the mistake of getting into the business as well. No, I'm kidding. It was great. And then I was fortunate enough to get to know you through Greg Sheevy, who I worked with for many years. And Greg was a wonderful photographer, one of the best.
Outstanding.
Amazing.
Yeah. And all with great stories about you. One of the funniest people I think I know in the world is you, John. And
Oh my gosh, thank you.
I'm curious, did you cross paths with Stephen Levitan then too?
Oh, yes. Steve and I, it's funny because Steve is the creator of Modern Family. And before that, for people who may not know, and before that was involved with Wings and writing for that and Frasier, and also created, I think, Just Shoot Me, or was one of the co-producers of it. But prior to all of that, Steve Levitan was a kid from Chicago who was graduated from UW School of Communications. And got his first job at KOW as a city hall reporter. And you could always tell Steve didn't really want to be covering city hall. And, you know, it takes a certain breed to do that anyway. It's a very important job, but it's not for anybody. Because Steve would, every night, he was writing teleplays after work, often, maybe not every night, for Moonlighting, which was a show at the time.
Oh, my gosh.
And we were all like, yeah, Steve, yeah, dream. Well, he went on to, somebody read his script and he got to know somebody and he got hired as an associate writer and he went, and then, but he was at WKW as, at the same time I was, came probably a year after.
Yep.
Very creative guy, did some really creative feature stories too, but mostly covering City Hall.
That's fascinating. Well, cheers to that. I happen to have my old mug.
Hey, look at that.
Look at that.
Nice.
Well, yeah.
Well, and then so you went right to King from KOW, correct?
I did. I that was in 1983. Sorry, 1989. And I got hired for a show that was canceled 11 weeks after I got out there.
Oh, no way!
And fortunately, I mean, that was a real introduction to big market television. Fortunately, they kept me and a photographer, and they put us on this evening show, and everyone else except for maybe one other person of the 30 some people was let go. And so we're let go. And but the King at that time had a programming department just doing local shows of some 80 people. I mean, just local shows. That was beyond the news department. And then it they kind of cut back when they were sold, but so I was fortunate. And so one of the shows I also did bits for was on the side, sort of, was called Almost Live. And it was a local comedy show that ran before Saturday Night Live. NBC gave King permission to do that. And the reason I bring it up is that's where Bill Nye started. So Bill and I worked together, and Joel McHale. Joel McHale started at King at Almost Live. And a couple other guys, Ross Schaefer, who used to host Match Game for a while after Rayburn, right. I guess. And then there were just a really talented stable of people there at King.
So what was your show? What was your show like?
So our show, I would say it was a cross between Entertainment Tonight, Dateline, and the old PM magazine. So one day you might be doing a guy who had a banana collection of everything, or, you know, lemons or whatever it was. And then the next night you'd be doing a man has been missing. We do like local Northwest unsolved mysteries. And it was a real amalgam of sort of like, I guess you would see in People magazine, almost that kind of a show.
Yep.
Restaurant reviews, that kind of thing.
Am I right on this? Was King, and we kind of talked with another one of our guests, Lisa Fielding. She talked about, I mean, she was kind of a groundbreaker in the Fox News local newscast thing. Mm-hmm. But am I right on this? King was kind of another superstation, so to speak, along the lines of WGN in some ways. I remember as a kid watching shows that came from King TV, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, that could be, unless it was, okay. I mean, there's King World Syndicate, which was different, but King.
Oh, that's it.
Was,
that's it.
What, yeah. Yeah. But in the Northwest, I would say they really were. We'd go to Alaska and we'd have, because on cable, you know, when you get into the remote areas of the country, there's sort of a, what's the word I'm looking for? A hub city that everybody goes through to get to Alaska, to, you know, Asia, to whatever. But in Alaska, we'd be on cable there. And in the Pacific Northwest and Southwest of Canada, which is British Columbia and Alberta, we were popular, and Montana and Idaho. So, and then they also started here in New York, they have New York One, and they had something similar in Seattle that went all around the Northwest, where they basically repurposed news stories. They had a cable channel that was went to Spokane, Boise, Portland, all over the Northwest, and that went away eventually. But it was so in that regard, it was sort of a flagship. Yeah,
that's interesting. I remember watching Little Rascals, so that was King World Syndicate. That was...
yeah, right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, I was young; my mind was very mellow.
Sure, of course, KING. Yeah. Yeah.
So your travels led to some interesting encounters with wildlife. I was watching on YouTube your penguin story, which was fascinating. What was that like?
Yeah. You know, there is, people always ask me of the 40 some countries you've been to, Antarctica is a continent, obviously, but we're going to call it a country for this purpose. what's the most fascinating, and I break it down by in three categories because it's really hard to do. I'd say Ireland for people and just overall experience is just fascinating. New Zealand is incredible for scenery and adventure, what you can do there, and the people. But Antarctica is just, when you step off in the subantarctic onto the island of South Georgia, and there are literally tens of thousands of penguins who have no fear of you, all over the hills, all walking past you, going up and down these little pathways they make to go down. They sit on the nest for a while, and then they go down and clean off in the water and come right past you. It's really, you're really immersed in nature. It's a fascinating place. And it's a good thing it's hard to get to. That keeps it pristine. But it's also unfortunate that not everyone can easily get there and see it, because it really is a remarkable corner of the planet. And I was so lucky to get there.
The beauty of TV, that's you brought that story to everybody. And I'm picturing it. Were you dressed up in a penguin costume too?
So right. Yes, exactly.
Waddling.
Like the penguin on the old Batman show.
Yeah.
So then I you kind of alluded to this before too. You came back to Madison then after being at King for 16 some years, I think. And so you kind of, you had family back here and you were kind of going back and forth.
Yeah, I was going back and forth. Yeah. My kids were living in Wisconsin. My wife at that time was raising them and, you know, really deserved an award for me being gone all the time, because I was out in, it went through a number of iterations, but basically I'd be in Seattle half the month and then in Wisconsin half the month. I was the original work at home guy, but in the 90s, before that was really a thing.
Thank you for breaking ground on that.
Yeah, that one, you're welcome. And yes, I'm starting a GoFundMe to remunerate myself for starting this trend. But I would.
I thought you had an OnlyFans site, but that's okay.
No.
that's separate, Dan. On that. Yeah.
Okay. Why do you think I'm in New York? I'm working on that. Anyway, so back and forth, I would spend 2 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks out there or traveling the world. And then I'd come home to DeForest, and where my wife at the time was a teacher and our kids went to school. And so then we, there was very fortunate to have bosses that saw that since it was not the news, I mean, obviously a news broadcast, well, back then, especially, it's not like I could be in Wisconsin, but this was more, I had to do 5 long format stories a month or documentaries or whatever. So, you know, it didn't matter if I lived in Wisconsin, had a laptop right there. And the funny thing is I had under my stairs, it was like Hogan's Heroes. Under my stairs, it was carpeting nailed up and this big old microphone and headphones
like these.
And I'd go down there and record on a reel to reel machine that King boxed up and sent out.
Wow.
If you know what reel to reel is, and this tape, and I'd have to FedEx it because you couldn't do it by web. I have to FedEx that tape out to Seattle, and then an editor would take it and they'd have my audio, you know, for my narration.
That's crazy.
So, yeah.
I can see you with your little stocking cap on, like Hinchlow on
exactly.
Yeah. Very good.
Hogan.
Nothing. I mean, you started in news back in 83. You have seen a ton of changes. Were they still using film back then in 83, or was it already into the 3/4-inch tape completely?
They had just switched probably a year prior from film. In fact, at UW, I think I was either the first class or second that was lugging around these big 3/4-inch, decks. And we had a shop. I still remember a shopping cart. We'd put them in and push them up and down State Street, to do stories that nobody saw probably because it was on the campus channel or whatever. But so it was that's a major change. And I think, the biggest change, though,
that was my next question. What's the biggest change?
I think the biggest change is the immediacy. You know, back when I started in the business, there was a 6 o'clock and a 10 o'clock. And there was the odd station, like Channel 3 had a 5 p.m. and a noon show. But that, that was unusual. It's usually a 6 and 10. There were no morning shows except those little cut-ins.
Yep.
So if you wanted to know what was going on, and obviously we didn't have these with, everything on it, at your fingertips. So you want to know what was going on. You stayed up for the 10 o'clock news. And that's why the numbers for 10 o'clock news were huge and why they're dwindling now. They're going down because we all have this at our phone, our finger at our phone. Our phone at our fingertips. I'm not anchoring anymore. that's the biggest change, is just the frequency of broadcasts and the need to make sure that doesn't become, faster is the important thing. It still has to be right. It still, we can live stream some really dramatic things and some horrific things if we're not careful. We still need to make sure that we're a gatekeeper and the things that go out are done responsibly, broadcast responsibly. So that's the frequency is the biggest thing, and the volume, at my former station, the news starts at 4:30 in the morning, 4:30 to 7, 11 a.m. You've got a 4 p.m. Stations are 4 to 5, a 5, a 6, a 9, a 10, weekend mornings, morning. It goes on and on. And then the web content. And so as an ancillary to that, I would say the web is probably the overarching bigger change. Right. That used to be an afterthought. You probably remember when it started out.
Yeah.
You were like, oh, I'll throw something on there. Lindbergh made it, it's like, well, that's a little old, but who cares? No one goes on there. Now it's web first. Yeah.
Right. Yeah,
Right.
that was just kind of starting when we were in it, and we'd be like, oh, you know, we just get done with the show, and it's like, oh, somebody has to update the website. It was always like,
Yes.
oh gosh, more
Right.
to, you know, we're exhausted. Here we
Right.
go. But now it's just, I mean, somebody might be
You
doing
do.
that exclusively.
Yeah. And I have to say too, one last thing that's really changed is the talent of, so the MMJ, multimedia journalists, used to be called a one man band. You know, they're doing everything. And I mean, I've seen these young people shooting a courtroom verdict, and they're tweeting while they're rolling, and I would still be like trying to log in if I were them. So, you know, for what they may lack in experience or polish because they're just starting out, they more than make up for with the amount of the number of talents they bring, and the ability to just multitask and do so much.
Yeah. That's not in my lexicon, multitasking.
No, me
the,
either.
The the other thing that even just when we were kind of when I was ending my career in TV news at the time, we had just kind of gotten email really, and the maybe a couple of years we had email. And so the immediacy of feedback from people,
Yes.
and that's so much quicker today now. I mean, people used to have to pick up the phone and say, "Hey, Dan, I don't like your haircut today." You know,
Yes.
get that up. But
Yes.
now they can just do it like that.
Yes. And it's really hard. The social media and the email, and you get some nasty ones. I think it's worse for women, to be honest. But I, you know, I've gotten my share of just, you know, were you drunk again? Were you know, all these just things, you're bleary eyed, old, for, you know, whatever. And then certainly
truth hurts. Truth hurts.
Really,
Dan.
Yeah. Thank you. That's true. During it really ramped up during the pandemic and elections, where, you know, people were told by some people that we were this, you know, commie enemy that was infiltrating the, you know, American political system, whatever they were told. And some people believe it. And then the pandemic, you know, everyone was to begin with. Mm-hmm. And then you've got someone on saying, you know, keep calm and do this and do that. Authorities are saying this. And so it was definitely a shoot the messenger time.
Did you feel a lot of heat from people? I mean, personally, you'd get things via social media or emails or whatever.
Yeah. There was a lot of, especially around politics, I'd say, because what's happened, I call it now, the barstool phenomenon is really what social media is. Back in the day, you know, before social media, there was always someone on the bar, the end of the bar, that was like, I'll tell you what, we never landed on the moon, you know, or whatever. And they're like, oh, that's just Freddie, you know, don't pay attention. But now Freddie goes on the web, and Freddie can find 10,000 other people who are saying, you're right, we never landed on the moon, or elections are fake, or whatever it is. And you can find people. And so it's affirmation. It's like, see, I knew I was right, I'm not alone. And then when if you're into conspiracies, you start to find these enemies of the people, you know. And so yeah, I think we all felt it. You know, the pandemic was obviously, emotions were running high, and then we had street protests and vandalism and everything else going on. You know, I am trying to not call people out on the air. I'm not a judge and jury. There were times I was watching street protests and I didn't see something happen, but something obviously happened. And then because I wouldn't say it, they're like, oh, you won't. Yeah. You're just ignoring the violence, or you're not making accusation. You know, you're avoiding the truth and all these things. Mm-hmm. There was a lot. Yeah. There's a lot of that.
It's hard to win. Yeah. It's hard to like get, it's just hard to get out unscathed. It seemed like I felt for everybody who was doing journalism, you know, during that.
Yeah.
Period,
and to put a positive bow on top of this, I don't know of another time in my career where what we did was more important, because there's a lot of noise coming from a small amount of people. And then there are the people over the years who've just said, you told me I needed to do this, and or I should suggest that I check into this, and I did it. And one quick story comes to mind of a guy whose wife was dying very slowly over the years of Alzheimer's, and he'd go visit her every day. He said, I visited her every day except two. Those were the times that John Stofflet said to me, don't go out on the roads tonight. And I was just like, I mean, that really got me. It's like people are listening and they're, you know, what we're doing and we're doing, it's important.
That makes it worth it for sure.
Right. Lisa Fielding was telling us kind of a similar account of her experience during the pandemic. She works at WBBM News Radio in Chicago. And she said it really took a mental toll on her. And, you know, she struggled with mental health after the pandemic, after things settled down. Did you experience anything like that?
I would say what I experienced was probably an acceleration toward wanting to retire. You know, I retired at 62. When you've done it long enough, it's not all that difficult to go in and anchor the news, you know, and it's sort of second nature to you. I probably could have done it until I was like one of those guys you see that's 75. Good evening. Thank you for joining us. Where are your children? You know, one of those guys. But
Ron Burgundy.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. But I would say that there was an emotional toll. Between the political and the pandemic, just the hatred toward the media, it was sort of like, I don't know, do I want to be in such a high profile position when there's that much animus out there, you know, high profile in the, you know, South Central Wisconsin.
Well, let's get back to something more fun.
Yeah.
So you have interviewed, I mean, when you were doing the entertainment kind of beat out at King, you have interviewed a lot of famous people over the years, including President Barack Obama, but that was in Madison.
Yeah.
Who is your most, I guess, the person you most enjoyed interviewing of those famous people? Sometimes it's just an everyday person, but of the famous people.
Of the famous people, it was a real thrill to interview Mel Brooks and make him laugh. You know, I had told him he was coming out with the producers, the road show that was traveling, the Broadway show that was going around the country. And so they had a junket. I'd go to a lot of junkets in New York or LA or London and interview these stars. And I had come up with this long list of the people Mel Brooks could possibly have offended over the years with his, you know, politically incorrect stuff, you know, which he was known for.
That's a pretty thick book.
Yeah, I taped together all these index cards that I had. I just put together a list of all the people you may have offended over the years and rolled it out, and it went on the floor. And he just started, you know, laughing really hard, which was like, oh, my God, Mel Brooks laughed at my joke. That's great. So Mel Brooks, George Clooney and I really hit it off. And I think what was fun there is at King, since we were a main West Coast affiliate, if a new show was coming out, they would send a crew from our station down to go behind the scenes. So when ER was starting with this guy no one knew really called George Clooney and had a bit role on Roseanne. But we spent the day with them and then caught up with him later in some junkets. And he's just a good Midwest Ohio guy. You know, he's very jovial. Jay Leno's great. I mean, just down to earth, you know. Nice. Then there are times you walk into a room and you're like, oh my God, that's Julia Roberts.
Right.
I'm interviewing Julia Roberts or Harrison Ford or whoever it was. It's just crazy.
Well, even the video of you walking towards President Obama, it's like, and he's standing and you're walking into the room announcing yourself or that someone announced you. It's like, oh my gosh. Even the fact that you're standing versus sitting, I was like, I was nervous.
Yeah, it was. We had people have asked me, how did you get chosen? I don't know. And it's funny, a funny story. I walked off the set one night after the six and there was an intern on the phones and they said, the White House is on the phone for you. And I was like, yeah. And the Queen of England's in the parking lot. Right. You know, so I thought this is going to be a crank call and get on. It was the White House. And they said, President Obama is wondering if you would like to come interview him on Monday. And this was like Thursday. And so I'm like, okay, yeah, there's a new tax plan they're rolling out. Well, I figured it out. I mean, I think they never told us why. There were five strategically important local market anchors there from around the country. And I was one that happened to be in Speaker Paul Ryan's district. And I'm guessing it was because, you know, the president was trying to get this bill out of the House because it was a fiscal bill. So it would have to go out of there. And so, you know, they picked Madison and then they went NBC. And then, oh, this guy's old. He'll ask, you know, questions that aren't embarrassing or whatever. But you walk in there and what a couple of the people in that group were terrified. They were like, I don't know what I'm going to do. Oh my God. I think I don't know if I can do this. And they were like, you're going to walk in. He's like a Chicago guy down to earth. Mm-hmm. And he was, we started talking Badger basketball because they had just lost the national championship like 2 days earlier.
Oh.
And he was, you know, so very easy to talk to. And that was a pinch me moment for sure. I think any journalist to have a one-on-one at the White House with a sitting, or in this case, standing president was pretty nice.
It's crazy. It's, I mean,
amazing.
I think a lot of journalists would envy that, just the opportunity to be there. It's what a career you've had, John. I mean, just all of the people you've met, all of the things you've done. Was he the only president you were able to interview over the years?
Yes. That was the only president. You know, I covered campaigns over the years, but I don't think anyone I ever covered won the election. And that was often back in a time when Democrats were trying to win Wisconsin. It was sort of during the Reagan era and the post-Reagan era when, you know, Wisconsin was kind of one of those states that, well, everyone's coming to now, but it was very important then, but it was pretty red at the time. So it's been a fascinating, I do pinch myself many times. It's nice now to have the time to kind of sit back and go, all right, you got out when you wanted to on your own terms. You didn't mess anything up too bad that I know of.
I'm working on
that. You can be proud.
Right.
Yeah. That's much my last question.
Breaking news. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. What about this lawsuit? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, no,
so
I'm
what's
just
next
lucky
for
guy.
You? Do you have plans or projects you're working on?
You know, this first year, I don't have a lot of projects. I mean, I might eventually, I think what you guys are doing is great. This is just a great creative outlet. That's a fun idea. I do a lot of kayaking. I did 808 miles this past year. And yeah, I do that and travel. I am doing trips for the station still. The Colette travel. Join me and my wife Anna for lovely.
Oh, fun.
We just got back from Iceland.
I'm thinking of signing up for one of those in the future, John.
I know. So. I'd like to do that too. Need any help?
I think you'd have fun. No, it's kind of a fun fun thing to do. And then volunteering. I mean, I'm still on the board of the Badger Childhood Cancer Network, and I volunteer for. I've done some things for the fire department, for just a number of organizations around town. So more of that to come. But at this point, no plans to go back on the air. But you know, it's hard to get that out of your blood.
Never say never.
Yeah, that's a good point. It is hard to get it out of your blood. That's why Carrie and I are doing this.
20 some years later,
it's still something fun to do. And you know, once you do it, it's somewhat of an addiction, you know, because
it is. And it's too bad. It's just so difficult. It's like theater or anything else that is on when people are off. You know, that tends to be when the main audience is there. It means that you have crazy hours and the pay. It used to be, it's getting a little better, but it's not great because there's a line out the door, kid, of people who want to be on TV. It's not you, it's him, yeah. You know? So, but it's a great career to go into. And for some people, it's a couple of years. For others, you know, if it all works out for you, it's 41 years, and I couldn't have been more fortunate than I was.
Well, John, I'm sorry. I'm the one who has to get off here and go do something else, but I would love to catch up with you again in the future. And it's good to have you still in the Madison area. And like you said, a career like journalism, just to kind of encourage people out there who might still be thinking about it, it's a career that opens a lot of doors. You meet a lot of people. There's a lot of tentacles that go out there when you're a journalist. And if you don't stay in the business, thank God you did, John, there are other opportunities that are journalism adjacent.
Yeah.
So, you know, thanks so much for coming on and talking about your career with us.
I thank you both, Dan, Carrie.
Yes.
Thank you so
wonderful
much.
Wonderful to meet
great,
you.
Great questions. Wonderful to meet you too. And I'm glad you guys are doing this. This was fun.
Thank
right,
you.
Enjoy
and
the
enjoy,
Big Apple.
Yeah, enjoy New York till we meet again.
All See right. You. We'll talk later. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to Old News with Dan and Carrie.
That's old news for now.
Join us next time. Yeah.